Good morning. It's been so long since I've worn one of these, I had to get back used to pushing my buttons. Glad you're all here today. This is something we look forward to every time we have a trip. We look forward to the opportunity we get to come back and tell you what we did. I'll tell you real briefly why this is important. I'll try to do it without crying, but y'all know how I am when we start talking about missions. Long time ago. Well, I guess the older you get, the less time long time is. But Devane McGee, he was a missionary to Africa, and he came back to this church. We supported him for many years, and he came to this church. And I had just recently stepped into this role as a missions director, and was trying to figure out, get my legs under me, and figure out, you know, how do we grow a missions culture in this church. And Devane McGee came, and he had been retired, and he was going back to the field. And so I was like, this is odd. You know, he's an old guy. You know, you can see all of his head. God didn't have to count the numbers of the hairs on his head anymore. And I thought, he's going back. I mean, he's going to a rough place. He's going back. Okay. So anyways, I sat in here, and I listened to him speak, and he spoke with such conviction and such fervor. And our young people, little ones, teenagers, they hung on every word he said. As I was walking across the street after service, the Lord spoke to me, because I've been wrestling with the Lord. The question was, how do we do this? Because it felt like we were always trying to push. And I said, but we weren't getting any traction. And I said, Lord, how do we grow this culture here? He said, they listened because Devane got on a plane, he went somewhere, he did something, and they wanted to hear what he did when he got back. So what we do today is a part of the secret sauce to the missions culture at First Assembly. The Lord revealed to me the way we grow a missions culture is we put guys on planes, we go do things, we come back, and we tell you all about it. Because whenever I look at biblical fundraising, what I see is that God identified the need. The prophet, the priest, the leader, whoever, spoke the need. And then God moved among the people to fulfill the need. And so this is our philosophy here. Our philosophy here is that we're going to tell you what God's doing. And we're going to trust the Holy Spirit to move in your heart to see where you fit into it. And then we believe that you people are good enough that you're going to participate and jump in with it. The biggest thing we can do is tell you what's going on. So that's what we're going to do today. So your team that you sent to Montana, this is the second time we went. We've been to Havre twice now. It was about 2 years ago when we went last time. And when we were there last time, we met it is Vos, right? Voss, okay. I pronounced it Voss, and then someone told me it was Vos, and then, so now I'm getting corrected, it's Voss. Okay, the Voss family, they left like Western Texas, y'all know how hot it gets down there, to go be pastors on a Native American reservation in Havre, Montana, okay? For those of you who don't know where that is, it's 20 miles from the Canadian border. Everyone around here knows Canada gets real cold, and it just spills right over. So, you know, they get snow drifts and all that good stuff. But they said that's what God called them to do, so they went to do it. Okay, so we went to go help them out last time, and we developed a heart for this community on the reservation. And so we got the opportunity again, Pastor Richard Stewart, he calls me from time to time and says, hey, I got this project, that project. He calls me and says, hey, man, that church really needs a new roof. You think you could get some guys to come do this? And I said, yeah, sure, we'll do it. And so we put the team together, and these guys went up. All they were supposed to do is put a roof on a new church. Well, you got guys who just cannot do what they were called to do. They got to do a little extra. So from what I understand, they put a roof on, they did some finished carpentry inside, they changed the front doors of the church, they stabilized the failing ceiling system, the truss system, and did you do anything else? Oh yeah, and they fixed and replaced the lighting in the basement of the church. So we sent them up there to put a roof on it, it's too easy, and they just went above and beyond the call of duty, right? More importantly, what they did was they arrived at a time when these pastors needed a breath of fresh air. And so these guys were able to minister to these pastors and encourage them and build them up. So I don't want to take up too much of their time because I really like for them to get to show you what the Lord laid on their heart. So we're going to show you a quick video. It's going to give you kind of a visual representation of what we did. And then I'm going to turn it over to these guys, and they're going to share what the Lord did through them and with them along this journey of doing this trip. So roll that beautiful bean footage. All right, and so with that, I'm going to ask Derek, since you had the mic, if you'll begin sharing today.
I did that.
Should I hold it?
There we go.
I'd hold it a long time. All right. Well, you know, going on mission trips and going abroad and going out of the country, and you have the experience of doing that, you know, you're thinking about going on a domestic trip, may not have the same feeling, but, you know, this really did. I obviously went and enjoyed the first time we went to Montana, but you know, we did get to know Michael and Kim, the pastors there at Living Waters. And, you know, we saw their heart and we saw their love for the Native American Indians, but also the missionary there, which is just Richard Stewart. He's just passionate about ministering to these Native Americans. And, you know, though we got to speak the same language, we still felt like it was almost like a foreign land. It was interesting how the culture and things are so different, and the way they minister is different. And I'm telling you guys, we need to lift up these Native Americans and the people who have a heart for this. You know, being a pastor, I really felt the burden and the feeling that, you know, like what they're doing is, especially with COVID, is so hard and tough to minister to these Native American Indians. The suicide rate, the drug and alcohol is just off the charts. It just goes to show you how socialism will destroy a people, and where they're not fulfilled in life, and they're seeking it through drugs and alcohol. And so I just think Michael and Kim, just being meeting them twice, you know, it's just, I love them. And then, you know, the people that we worked with there, the youth pastor there from the Browning Church to Blackfeet Reservation, and we just had a great time working with them. It was just absolutely fulfilling to go on such a trip and be such a part of it. And I appreciate y'all sending this. It was awesome.
I went last time and all, and we got to meet some of the more interaction with the Native Americans, at least on my part. Mm-hmm. This time it was more just with these guys and with Richard and Gordon and Donnie. Gordon and Donnie live kind of in the area. Donnie's in Browning, Richard's over on the west side of the mountains. But these guys just have a heart for the Lord and a heart for the Indians there. And I got to talk with them more this time to understand the culture there, why they're like that, and things like that. Got to know these guys better, and I think it kind of forms a bond between people that go on these trips. You know, sometimes when you just come here on, you know, for meetings and all, you don't really get to know people as well as when you're with them for a week or so interacting. And that's kind of what I got out of it.
So for me, this mission trip was a little bit different. For me, this was my first time going in probably 3 or 4 years. And I'm probably going to cry. This is a lot going on. But it's the first one I went on since I rededicated my life, since I walked away. And so for me, it was nice being in the U.S. It was nice going to just work, because that's what I know, that's what I do, is just getting back into the swing of things and getting back into ministry where I feel like I belong. And so for me, it was just kind of a time of renewal and a time to find my place back where I'm supposed to be with the Lord, and being with some of the best guys there are around, you know, and just getting to see their heart and getting to see the heart of the guys that live over there and that minister over there. It's just a renewing time, and just makes you, I don't know what I'm trying to say, it just makes you wonder why you do some of the things you do, and just to see the way other people live and the life that they have. And man, we're so much more blessed over here, and we take it for granted a lot. And so it's just a time of renewal and getting back to where I need to be. And so that's what this mission trip meant to me.
This was my first mission trip ever. So I was very nervous and looking forward to going and feeling all the emotions, especially with having a newborn. And leaving my wife at home with my with my kids. And for me, it was a time to just really trust God. And because in my career and at home, everybody trusts me. And I think I get caught up in that a lot of times, and being the one that my guys look up to at work, and I'm responsible for them and keeping them safe, and responsible for my wife and my kids. And so this trip for me was just being uncomfortable and serving God and being up on a roof when it's raining and not, you know, you know, firefighters aren't supposed to be scared of heights, but I'll tell you, I am. So, so being uncomfortable and getting up there because I signed up to go do it, and just trusting God to keep me safe, and just trusting God to take care of my family while I was gone, take care of my guys while I couldn't be there to look out for them. And for me, that's what really hit me, was just how much I needed to trust God on this trip. And then through doing that, he kind of opened me up to, even though I was missing my kids and everything, Michael and Kim, their kids were there, and they had some kids that they were watching for a little while, and just being able to love on them and kind of fill that gap of missing mine. And it just really touched me a lot. And a funny story, like our first night out after we got to the hotel, we were going to go to Pizza Hut, and they were closed. I guess they don't open Pizza Hut on Mondays there for some reason. But so towards the end of the week, when we were kind of getting done, we had kind of decided that we were going to get Pizza Hut on the last day of work. And some things came up, and we decided that we needed to stay there that day and put some more work in to make sure that their church was safe for them to be in, and work on their roof up in the attic instead of, you know, doing the tin and everything like we had done. And, you know, that was just a reminder to me that, hey, dude, you're here to do what you signed up to do. You're not here to get what you want. And so so I had to just wait until I got home to get what I wanted. But yeah, I had an awesome time in fellowship with these guys, and getting to know them all, and getting to spend just some personal time with my father-in-law and with my family friends, Kyle and Sean, and just getting to love them. And it was just an awesome experience for me, and I think I really needed it.
So there were a lot of firsts for this particular trip. It was the first mission trip I've taken since I've been married. It's the longest I've been away from my wife since we got married. So there was the newness of dealing with that. This was the first trip that I have been responsible for the team, from making promises and breaking promises about going to Pizza Hut. Standing people up for breakfast and being slapped in the face with a shingle. But no, it was a blessing to be responsible, to make sure that, you know, they got from point A to point B safely, to make sure that they got food, even if it wasn't exactly what they wanted. They make sure, yes, they don't get in fights in Arby's. That was not their fault. You know, Derek mentioned the foreign nature of being on a reservation. And I thought about not including the rain delays in the video, but there's actually a story behind the place that we were that I think is important to understanding the spirit of missions work on a reservation. So the place that we went that day was the Bear Paw Battleground, and it is the place where the Nez Perce Native Americans surrendered to the U.S. Cavalry after fleeing over 1,000 miles trying to get to Canada. It was a very depressing side trip, but at the same time, it reminded us that the people that Michael and Kimberly have been called to help are a people that have been misled, have been lied to, have been slaughtered by people that look a lot like them. So it's not just a matter of them reaching out to an unreached people. They're reaching out to an unreached people that I mean, they could not be more different than what you would think of as the ideal. But God is using them in a very special way. And, you know, I got to spend a whole lot more time with Pastor Michael this time than I did on the last trip. And I got to see his heart, and I got to see what drives him. And God has moved him in a very special way, him and his wife, to reach out to the people that are the hardest to reach out to. He draws inspiration from a lot of the missionaries that are over in the Middle East. They have a lot of love for those guys, and they see them sacrificing not just their day-to-day way of life, but their actual lives to share the word and to share the love of God. And in their own way, I mean, it's kind of like Jason mentioned. I mean, they went from West Texas to Havre, Montana, which, I mean, it's beautiful. I ain't going there in the winter. I mean, last time we were up there, we were in September. We left a week before the blizzard started. In September. No. And the week before we got there this year, it was in the 90s. So we think we got crazy weather here. But it was as unique a trip as the first time we were up there. And so long as it's, you know, not in the middle of the winter, I'll go again.
Here you go.
No, you're stuck. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so two things. I told these guys if they don't talk long enough, I preach. So they didn't talk long enough, so I'm going to preach. I have 6.5 minutes by the time. No. What I wanted to say before I share what the Lord laid on my heart was, there's a couple of things about the script that you need to know. Sean talked about this being the first trip that he led, which is totally true, but some of you may not understand that he found out he was leading this trip less than 24 hours before he had to lead the trip. Yeah, like life changed really fast, and I was able to call him and say, hey, this is the situation I have in front of me. I need to stay home. Can you do this? And he said, yes, totally, I can do this. And so I say that because I want you to understand that we tell you things like this all the time. We tell you how much talent is in this church, and we tell you about the gifted people that are in this church. But I want to give you real-world examples where you can see that not many mission teams are built that the guy who planned and executed and got everything ready can disappear the day before the trip and nobody know. Okay? You have a team that can do that. Because when I look across this group of guys, any one of them are leaders. Every one of them are powerful men. And God built just the right team to address what we needed to address while we were in Montana. I want you to understand that God is doing something in your church. Okay. In your missions program, God's hand is evident in it. So I want you to understand that you have on this team, this just hodgepodge team of guys. We said we're going to go to Montana. We're going to put a roof on, right? And you have a guy who is a structural engineer. You have a guy who has built his own house. You have a guy who has traveled the world. You have a guy who knows all health and safety there is, paramedic, leads fire crews. You have another guy who loves building and has been a builder most of his adult life. God just put those things together, and we're able to go do great and wonderful things. We are missing two members of our team today. Noah, who said, "I'm not coming because you make me talk in front of people." Truthfully, Noah goes to another church down in Chester. So, but Noah is a finished carpenter and a man who has done a many a different construction trades in his whole life. So yet again, another tremendous asset to have on a project like this. And then my good buddy Caleb, who is a security man of all security. Caleb is he is the perfect armor bearer. And so when I knew that I had to send Sean with very little notice, it gave me great peace to know that he had Caleb, who has always been my right hand to stand beside me and keep me propped up in these little tense situations. So I let Caleb room with Sean, and I kept him propped up or gave him somebody to beat up on or something. I'm not sure. But is he a good intern? Good intern, okay. I want you to understand that you have a very gifted and a very wonderful team. But I don't want you to sit there and go, "Well, I could never be a part of that." Because the truth is, they's all just a bunch of bums until they answered the Lord's call. And you too can be a bum until you answer the Lord's call. I want you to understand that while we have all this talent, that's not what makes our team great. It's the Spirit of God that rests in these people that make them great. And that same Spirit rests in you. And so next time we put a trip together, more than likely it will be co-ed, because I already understand there's a bounty on my head if I do not take women somewhere. But more than likely, Lord willing, it'll be co-ed. And so I'm going to ask you, even now, begin to consider how you might be used by the Lord for whatever that next project is and wherever it might go. Because if he puts it on your heart, he'll fund your way. He'll take care of you while you're there. He'll take care of what's at home while you're gone. And you won't have to worry about it. It's going to be okay. Okay? So I am thrilled that I do get to share briefly. Mr. Ronnie was somewhat discouraged because I brought a snack today. And they say that's never good when the guy preaching has a snack in his pocket. So if y'all see me start fiddling with this pocket, y'all know I'm not going fast, right? Exodus chapter 17 has a really interesting story. It's a story that whenever I start sharing it, most of you, "Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember hearing about this." It's pretty popular in culture. But what I wanted to do today is I kind of wanted to give you guys an understanding of what our missions program is really about, because we're different. We're not like most missions programs, okay? I hope it doesn't upset you, but I will tell you that on my list of objectives when I look for trips for us to do, usually they're going to involve something that other churches don't want to do. I'm really not that concerned about the people that go on our trip having the opportunity to go do evangelism on a trip, okay? I'm not telling you that because I think that's wrong. I'm telling you that because I don't believe that's our call here. Now, nothing's absolute, right? There may be opportunities where that occurs. But the specific culture that God's been cultivating here, we find in Exodus chapter 17. Beginning in verse 12. It says, "When Moses' hands grew tired, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword." I could have read the whole section of scripture to you, but in the interest of time, I'm going to trust you to go back and read it. I'm just going to tell you kind of what it talks about. We have here the famous image that most church people know, where Moses' hands are held up and the Israelites are battling down on the battlefield. And when his hands would come down, they would begin to lose. When his hands were up, they would win. And so Moses gets tired. The battle drags on all day. So, you know, we have these two guys who hold his hands up, and ultimately Israel wins. In this story, I see three arms of ministry. We have Joshua, who was told to go down on the field and lead the battle. He's the boots on the ground. We have Moses, who is the leader. He's calling the shots. He's hearing from the Lord, and he's directing. And we have Aaron and Hur. They're the support system. When I consider this in the limelight of missions, I see Moses as the missionary. So the missionary has a very specific call on his or her life. God usually reveals something inside of them. God calls them to a specific people or a specific work, and usually a specific geography. And they know and they must go. I sat beside a girl at a missions lunch one time many years ago, and she told me where she was going, and I looked at her, and she was young, she was pretty, she was kind and polite, and she told me where she was going, and I said, you know, that's a good way to get yourself killed. You understand that, right? And she said, God said, I have to go, so I'm going. That's the missionary call, okay? Let me tell you something. God didn't tell me to go where she is. I sure hope he doesn't. But he told her to go. And he told her the people that she was supposed to reach. And God paid her way. And God opened her doors. And God sent her to those people. It's not my job to go in her place. That's not our role. See, the missionary has a very specific role. Pastor Richard Stewart, who our team went to help, if you spend a day with Richard Stewart, you will know God called him to reach the Native American people of Montana with the good news of the love of Jesus Christ. If you spend one day with him, you'll know the specific call, the specific geography, and you'll understand why God paid the way. That's his call. It's not our call. So are we Joshua? Are we down on the battlefield? No, I don't think that's our call either. You see, when missionaries, just to give you the organizational structure, usually a missionary may have missionary associates underneath them. They may have local teams that help them accomplish the work. Like we think of our own Ken Harrell in Honduras. Ken Harrell does a great work down there, but he has a huge network of Hondurans who work to carry out the mission of the Children's Gift Ministry all over the nation. Those are the Joshuas. Those are the hands and feet, the boots in the ground. Those are the people who are running and getting it done. You see, to be the Joshuas, you're going to be in the battle the whole battle. You see, from Rock Hill, South Carolina, it's kind of hard for us to, you know, just to be a Joshua. It's not our role. In this story, we have Aaron and Hur. Victory depended not on Aaron and Hur. Victory didn't depend on Joshua. Victory depended on Moses' hands being raised. That's what victory depended on. Aaron and Hur observed that. They noticed that. And when they noticed that Moses is at the end of what Moses can do, they said, how can we help him to keep those hands up? They got creative. They got innovative. They went into action. And that's what our missions program does. You see, we have developed a reputation in the missionary ranks that we are the church you call when you're getting near the end of your reserves and you got something nobody else wants to touch. Because we are the people who we don't care if you ever know that we were the heroes in battle. We are the kind of people that we're not trying to take the missionary's call. We're not trying to do what God called the missionary to do. Man, we just want to hold his hands up. That's all we want to do, okay? So these guys, I'm telling you, they can tell you more detail, but I've heard some of the conversations they had with these pastors that we went to help. those pastors needed some people to come alongside and hold their hands up. The reason we like to go build buildings is because those are things that missionaries have a hard time finding people to do. You see, because most of the church, they think that missions is just telling people about Jesus. And so whenever a missions director in another church goes, all right, guys, we're going on a mission trip. If they don't tell people, you're going to get to go house to house and share Jesus. People don't feel like they're doing missions work, so they don't want to go. That's not this church. There are many, many trips. You may not ever get that opportunity. Because when we go, we're like the seals. We're going to roll in. We don't care if we're noticed. And when we leave, you're going to know we were there. That's what our church does. So I tell you that to tell you, I want you all to be real proud of the men that you have. Because I think about the missionaries and the pastors that I've talked to after our teams have left. I've talked to them all over the world. I've talked to them, and I'll tell you that the most fun thing for me is being the guy that gets the call that no other missions director will take. Because, you know, we really did send a team to do like some HGTV remodels on a compound in Costa Rica. Let me just tell you, there aren't many missions teams that would feel like they was doing the Lord's work by doing that. But we do, because we get it. Our job is not to do the missionary's job. Our job is to lift their hands up. Because victory depends not on us. Victory doesn't depend on the Joshuas. Victory depends on their hands being up. And it's our job. And God has gifted this church with a whole lot of good people who understand we don't need the credit. We don't need to be seen. We don't need all. We are here to hold up the one that God promoted. God put that missionary there, and wherever there's a missionary that needs help, we want to go help them. That's our objective. So when I was thinking, Pastor Steve said, you'll share, I thought, well, what could I share that would depict what our team does? And the Lord reminded me of this story. And so I'm asking each of you to think about, because you're a part of a missions-minded church. You're a part of the culture that we've been building for quite some time. And I know some of you can't get on planes, and I know some of you can't go places. I understand that, and I don't fault you for it one bit. But you can hold a missionary's hands up. And in fact, you can take this principle out of the missions arena, and you can apply it anywhere in the kingdom. It's your job to identify when God has called someone to do something. And it's not your job to step in and do it for them. It might be your job to just lift their hands up. Because they're going to win the victory. Victory is going to be dependent on the one God called to do it, to get it done. But you look for pastors. You look for ministry leaders. You look for nursery directors. You look for ranger commanders. You look for girls' ministry leaders. You look for food bank leaders. You look for whoever God has called to do something. And you ask God, how can I help them keep their hands up? Because God called them to do the work. And you might think, well, I could jump in and do it. Victory didn't depend on Aaron and Hur's hands being up. Victory depended on Moses' hands being up. So you find that leader, and you ask God, how can I help hold their hands up? See, I loved it. No one told Aaron and Hur, hey, lift Moses' hands up. No one told them that. No one said to Aaron and Hur, you know what? If you'll set Moses on a rock, and then you can hold his hands up, victory. They observed that, which meant that they were intentionally looking for how they could be a part. That's what I think God has to say to us today. Won't you be looking at how you could be a part of holding someone's hands up? And if you're a leader, let someone help you. Hold your hands up. Let someone help you. Because victory is dependent on your hands being up. Victory is dependent on you getting done what God calls you to get done. And the truth is what God calls you to get done is probably bigger than what you got the ability to do. I've said it for a long time. God ministers to his body through his body. So let the body help you out. Pastor Steve, I'd love to give you the opportunity to close things out today with your team.